Welcome everyone, you were listening to it, perhaps watching, calling the audible. It is now 5 weeks into the season. I've messed up the name of the show I've been on for 5 years.
Thanks, Ray.
Five times. Yeah, it's a little bit of an Anton Sackage situation. I'm joined by my co-host, Simon Dagenet, to the left of me, Eagle to the right of me, and he's producing the show.
Is
poorly
he?
As always.
Is it?
I gotta be for Eagle. He's the producer of the show, right? So, like, you and I are scrambling all day to get topics together to, like, look at interesting things. Because we have such a short deadline to work for the fall season. Because games end Wednesday night. And then we basically have, like, a half a day to put the show together.
A work day.
And, like, you know, I'm like, you know, send me your topics. So, not only does Eagle not give us topics, but then it takes forever to set up the interviewer. Knowing that I like... prepare my interview questions for the guests.
Maybe
knowing he could have done this literally 5 minutes after the previous show. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Dan Lazara for joining us last week. This week, Daniel on the show, game of the week guy.
Maybe he's doing it out of spite because we make fun of him
because
for an hour.
He works so hard and he does nothing.
We make fun of him for a straight
also,
hour.
Also, the scroll guys, step it up, man. Let your comedy, let your creativity fly. Look, one thing I know about computer software people is they're very creative. So I need you to showcase that creativity. There we go. Thanks, Eagle. Whatever you wrote, I'm sure it's pleasant and about me.
Can you be more like Chapman?
So eat more, sleep more, bop more. So welcome to the show, everyone.
Hi.
Let's get into some of the week's action.
All right, it's about FPF.
Yeah.
Totally forgot.
Oh, what are we? I don't even have a clock set up.
What's a clock?
I don't even know how deep we are into the show.
We're
like a second into the show.
In my defense, we had internet problems that I needed to resolve.
We did. But the interview, though. What's your excuse for that one?
Everything you said is fact.
All right. So I like to start the show with a segment I like to call Eagle Lockdown the Hell.
So this is a fun game, actually.
Sure it was.
There was, you know what, in some ways, I actually kind of wish this was Game of the Week. There were some really
crazy
plays.
Well, I was going to mention that. So let me start with that, actually. It's not Game of the Week. There's some scheduling difficulties. We reached out to Flamand Fou. I'm going to post something on Facebook well tomorrow as well. I reached out to Flamand Fou. I told him, you're going to be unofficial Game of the Week at some point. We promise this season we're going to have you covered. Unfortunately, we couldn't get the lockdown Flamand Fou game. But Lance Daniel, who we'll talk to later about other topics, scheduling is not particularly interesting. But we'll talk to him. He does a great job, and I'm sure he's going to get out there to cover them. We're working hard to find a time slot to fit them in, but it's an absolute priority for us, and we're happy to do it. Unfortunately, and the scheduling concern was that I couldn't possibly schedule another moment of my week where I need to see Eagle's face, and I didn't want to see it on Game of the Week.
Sure.
So Eagle, you were saying the game. You wish it was Game of the Week because
there were some crazy plays on both sides of the ball. I mean, some ridiculous catches. And again, kind of like last week, this is a game of fourth downs where lockdown got stopped twice, got picked off once. Flamand Fou converted twice on fourth down for touchdowns, got stopped once. And on another ridiculous play, a ball that should have been an interception instead bounced off someone's hands onto another receiver who then had to dive for the ball to catch it in the end zone for a touchdown on like a 30-yard pass. So there's that one. And then near the end of the game, a potential pick six, which is dropped. I mean, it was a great game and everything. And I don't know who it was. Someone hurt their knee. I hope everything's going okay. But yeah, it was a really good game.
No, it's good to hear.
I see what you mean now by when I use the word ridiculous too often.
It sounds like.
I see it now.
Or when I say between stuff. Eagle.
Between stuff.
You were given their entire offensive playbook. Mm-hmm. Was that what you witnessed? Mm-hmm. And they still executed? Or
not
did they change?
Necessarily.
Because I also spoke to Thomas Kutsu and was like, hey, dude, this is what we picked up on. Talk to your quarterback. So I'm curious to see. Did Nicholas Schaefer actually make the changes or was it just execution and they ran the same concepts and the same and he read the field the same way he typically does?
Same concepts to a large degree. Mm-hmm. Little bit of a difference, but mostly the same.
Okay.
And basically, to a certain degree, you can't do the same thing on defense every single play. So basically, it would be like first down, either 5 yards or incomplete. Second down, 5 yards or incomplete. Third down, 5 yards or incomplete. That's the first down, right? So drive the field based off of... Sorry?
Yeah, either way, you got a first down. Correct.
Yeah, so basically it was that where it's like, okay, we took this away, and then he missed, and then took this away, and then he found one. So it was kind of that the entire game.
Okay. I'm curious because, again, because it was a particular point of interest in that, I wanted to see this is my social experiment of, like, let me tell Eagle what works. Let me tell Nicholas Schaefer what we did. Let's see what works. Let's see who wins that.
Let's see who trusts you.
Well, but also the thing that we picked on for Nicholas Schaefer, for those who didn't listen to the previous show, is the way that he reads the defenses. He reads sort of like the destination of the checkdown, but doesn't read the intermediate part of the field, so he doesn't see when guys are closing in on the outside receivers, so he exposes himself to some dangerous passes. But he throws the ball so hard that he still gets away with some of them.
It's the sort of thing that would have worked.
I actually ducked on the ball that he threw in my direction. He threw it really at my face, and instead of trying to make a play on it, I ducked because he throws that hard.
It's something that would have worked in like touch or tackle football because mm-hmm. it feels larger. Right? Yeah. So you're reading the sideline. There's nobody. The safety can't get there if he's in the middle because it's too far.
Exactly.
But in FPF, he's a lot closer.
But because like you're like if that's the way you read the field, you'll like it's hard to get out of that habit, right? So I was curious to see if they made adjustments. And to Eagle's point, like he seems to have somewhat adjusted that. Plus, again, athleticism to make up for it when he doesn't get away with it.
Well, I was going to say, when Schaefer fits those balls, first off, there's really tight windows, and he gets them in just the right spot.
Yeah.
But he can put them in a place where his receiver can get to them when someone else can't, right? So jump ball, you can potentially reach for a diving ball someone can grab. And it's a lot of those concepts where it forces you to have to pick your poison, and he's smart enough and accurate enough to find the guy who's actually open. So unless you're gambling on every single play, he's going to execute.
Speaking of gambling, we had placed a bet last week.
Yes.
On the who would go off for the EZW game. I had Laurence Etienne Gervais.
I had Victor Baron.
And Eagle, you had?
I think it was Charles Olivier Leving.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of them were the one who went off. Instead, it was Jean-Christophe Ferlin. He went off, so no one gets a free steak, unfortunately.
It's guaranteed you knew.
Double or nothing? Two steaks? talking about high stakes. 462 and nice. Two, so four catches, 62 touchdowns, and two touchdowns.
Wait, what now?
That's four catches.
You said a lot of words. You said touchdown a lot.
Yeah, four touchdowns, 62 touchdowns, two touchdowns.
54 yards, two touchdowns, over six catches.
62 yards.
Four whatever, catches. Dog.
All right. That's all the numbers. This is all terrible.
Don't go look at the website right now.
Why? Is it down or am I wrong?
The website is down.
You're wrong. So...
Rob, also, if you're watching.
Jesus Christ. Carlo, fix your shit.
So what's wrong with broken ankles?
I don't think they're that good.
Fair.
They're division E team.
I was like, next topic.
I don't think they're a division E team that got relegated to division E2 that bragged about being in E2.
Well, like, the team's a bit different now.
They're too good.
They brought in a few guys from
the crew. I get it. My question is,
yes.
Do you think that they'd be better off with Matt Damon as quarterback? The Matt Damon of FPF?
No. I just don't think like it.
Because like we've seen Matt Damon have a really good season with Ducks.
Fantastic.
Turned the season around for Ducks.
Yes.
We saw
win
him.
The championship with, for
win them. The championship with Ducks. He's always been effective.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like he's like weirdly self-conscious.
Damon's
like
very.
He's a skinny girl who thinks she's fat.
Damon's very good when he doesn't play with his own players because he relies on other guys, right? So with Ducks, he had to learn who's good on this team and spread the ball and use mm-hmm. different receivers. When he used to play with his Zephyr, he always had a check down guy. He always had like a third down guy. Mm-hmm. And the problem is when you pick up on it, then that's when he makes mistakes.
Yeah.
And it's too easy to see when you just look at the stats. So I think that just to play with guys that are not necessarily his usual core helped him. but I don't think it's the right time for him to try to turn the season around, considering like the depth of this tier and how broken ankles are playing and stuff like that.
What do you think is wrong with them?
The quarterback plays weak.
So don't replace the quarterback, but the quarterback.
But I don't think it's a better option. I don't think Domo's really better than Jonathan Namir. The quarterback plays weak. Their defense is terrible. She allowed 51 points.
Yes.
I understand there was two pick sixes, but...
I think that might be a result of just playing a much more powerful offense than their defense.
Yeah.
Because that's now that Jeremy White is starting to use all of the pieces around him, it's a dangerous offense.
I agree, but there's also ways to play that, right?
Well, so what would you do? You're scheming. Actually, I'll ask both of you because you don't know anything about defense, but you play quarterback. What's a defense? but Eagle, you know, you've been a defensive play caller for a while. When a guy has legitimately five targets and all of them are likely faster than the guys you have, how do you approach that game?
Well, considering I've seen some of these W game, the first thing I would do is you have to tell your guys that once the ball is caught, you can't just watch the player run. So people from, even if you're on the opposite side of the field, you have to go play the tackle, because you see it often. I guess on the other side of the field, you just get lazy and then somebody misses the tackle and then you get a touchdown out of it. And play safe in a way that will play clock rather than try to make plays. Let them catch a 2 or 3 yard hitches and don't allow any deep throws over your head. Mm-hmm. Force them to drive the field slowly but surely. And at some point, they're going to get antsy and they're going to try to throw it over your head, and that's when you get the interceptions because you're playing with a cushion. And it's going to fall on your offense to keep up with them at least for the first few drives.
I have a completely different view of how to beat a team like that, but I'll go to Eagle.
For me, first off, you have to put your best tackler in the mic position, like middle of the field. That's got to be number one. From that point onwards, you can do one of two approaches. First off, you can't play man because you're going to get beat. That's going to happen. So you have to play a type of zone. If you're getting beat or if they're getting yards on anywhere between the 10 to 20 yards in terms of their gains, you're going to want to play a little bit deeper from your safety. So you play two, sometimes three safeties, about 15 yards back. And then at that point over there, everyone playing your flats is playing a little bit off the line, about 5 to 10 yards. Anything in front of you, you're shooting right away because you're going to have to be aggressive in the short zone. If you have nothing in front of you, you start backing up, in which case then your safeties can kind of either cheat up or cheat down depending on where the ball's going. You're basically gambling on every play. If you want to get more aggressive about it, you shoot the ball. If you want to be a little bit more conservative and play clock, you try and force them to drive like a few yards at a time.
See, this is where I agree with you and disagree with Simone. And I only partially agree with you, which is interesting because it's three people with three completely different views. I think you're way too conservative. I think you get eaten up, and their offense is an offense that executes. So unless you have an offense that equally executes, you're basically banking on the fact that they're going to make a mistake more quickly than you are. I want to increase the amount of possessions in the game. I want to run as many offensive plays as possible. I want them to run as many offensive plays as possible and let variance take over. And what I want to do on defense is jump every first read, take away the things we consider to be the first read, jump and release. So jump to, if a quick out in front of you, jump to take it away. If it's not there, you're releasing to pick up something behind you. And if it exposes you to a late developing route, that's fine. Make the rusher get there and try to force turnovers. Don't try to force turnovers on downs.
And keep in mind, a lot of zone defenses get beat in the intermediate routes, yes. Right? Sitting between that short and that deep. So if you're playing in that short position and you have no one around you, there's someone standing behind you. It's time for you to start backpedaling because your safety isn't going to get there.
Yeah, so I'm saying jump and release. So if you jump around in front of you, nothing's in front of you, you're dropping and scanning to see where you're picking up an intermediate route.
And if it's a mobile QB, make sure you have an understanding with your rusher, whether he's pursuing or if you have to get to the line to try and force him to throw it.
And that's the case with Jeremy White being particularly mobile.
That's usually what he does, right? The first read's not there, he's going to take off towards one sideline, buy himself some time, and he has the option of throwing it on the run or running.
Mm-hmm. One of the more...
Let's talk about your game.
Sure.
One speed power against me machine.
Sure.
So you guys won, which is it's not necessarily super impressive. You're a good team for tier two, but also
I thought we were going 0-8, to be honest.
Well,
we're just up from Division 6. Well, so Mike Adon has never thrown for this team. You know what I mean?
So is also like Mean Machine, who are also one of the weakest team in the division. But scoring 38 points is impressive, regardless of who. Like, even if this is your only win of the season.
It's not.
It's not, but if it would have been, you still scored 38 points against a team, which is pretty good.
Yeah. What do you want to know?
You want to tell us a little bit about the game?
Sure.
Like, why did you win?
So, if I say the following sentence, since their 1 week loss,
mm-hmm.
by there I mean our, but I'll just say there. Since their 1 week loss to Diablos, who are a far superior team,
mm-hmm.
One Speed Power have not given up more than 25 points
mm-hmm.
and have 8 interceptions over the last 2 games, despite having 0 sacks.
You sound biased, but go on.
These are literally facts. I mean, I'm biased in that I'm talking about my own team, but these are...
Are these real facts or alternative facts?
I mean, they're facts from our website, so insofar
so
as...
We can't
which is
check
back
them,
by the
verified.
Way.
So we can't check them, funny.
But what can you surmise about their defense knowing that?
Mermaid Machines or One Speed Powers?
What can you surmise about the One Speed Power defense given all the information I just listed?
Well, first of all, less than 25 points is pretty good.
Yes.
Like it's either you're playing very, very slow, it's sort of like a keyboard lock offense.
0%.
Or...
You know our offense.
No, I know, but like either you're slowing the game down and you're only playing 5 possessions and you make one intercept when you make one play, or the fact that you have 8 interceptions, like you said, you're not playing turnover on downs.
But despite having 0 sacks.
Yeah, but then again, if you're playing guys in that sort of tier where if your rusher gets there, sometimes guys just discard the ball instead of taking sacks.
Mm-hmm.
You see it often. You see quarterbacks in Division 4 or 5 that... When they played a few seasons back, they were taking too many sacks, and it's frustrating because you turn from 2nd and 5 to 3rd and 12, and it's crippling your offense. So you have receivers telling you to just chuck it up and give me a chance. And once the quarterbacks start doing that, so you're dropping back, the rusher's in your face, and you're throwing over the rusher, you get picked off. So rushers not necessarily get sacks, but your defense gets interceptions.
Yeah,
because your rusher could be putting a lot of pressure. Or the other versus is you have no rushers, and... your rush is so bad that he's not getting any pressure and your defense making effort.
So I want to talk a little bit about me machining Daniel Goloff because, again, it's just more comfortable for me to talk about the other team than my own team. But
it's also because you won, so it's boring.
Yeah. It's more fun to pick apart my team when we lose. Daniel Goloff, I thought of him after this game as the poor man's Simon Dagenet. I don't actually mean that as an insult.
I'm already a poor man's people already.
you're a poor man's quarterback. But like, let's say, for example, like when you... If you had the knowledge you have now, playing in Division 5, Division 4...
Back in the days.
Yeah. You like, last time you threw in Division 4, for example, you had, what, 40-some-odd touchdowns, right?
Yeah, we played well. We had a good season.
So, but that's the thing, is, like, Daniel Goloff is similar in that he has a very strong arm, and he calls a lot of isolation reads, a lot of high and low reads. And the problem would seem to occur... He's more fleet of foot than you are.
Yes.
So he can move, but he doesn't seem to want to move. He seems to want to stand in the pocket and throw. So what happens is he, one example of a typical play call is he has a hook on the outside, a post from the slot, mm-hmm. a hook in the middle. He looks to the hook. If you jump the hook right away, he tends to panic and throw up the ball. And like literally we're in 2-on-2. So a safety is standing directly where the post is. Because the read in 2-on-2 is, read if there's a post. If not, jump the hook. For as one of the defenses we were playing, and then same thing in the red zone, you ran a lot of mirrored plays. So mirrored plays, if you know it's coming, the halves can drop to take away the deep ends, and the corners can shoot underneath the in breaking route. So one of the safest plays in FBF becomes one of the most dangerous plays in FBF, and that's what we saw in this game. That's why he threw the interception.
Yeah, I think. There's something.
He literally could have thrown 7 interceptions this game.
Yeah.
Because 2 were dropped and 1, I'm not a quick individual.
I think there's something that he's also going to learn, also if they call him ever, because somebody's going to tell them or he's going to learn by himself, is there's one thing about calling ISO plays, like you said. You're basically playing man-to-man against the defense and you're hoping your receiver's better. But you need to start calling plays that shoot 2 guys at the same defender, so you force him to take a decision. So, for instance, if you're sending a post up the middle, you could send a skinny post, which goes over top, and a hard post from the other side underneath. So you force the safety. You look off one guy. You force the safety to take a decision, and that's when you hit. So you're forcing him to either drop back with the skinny post, and then you hit the hard post underneath, or vice versa. But if you're sending only one guy at him, he doesn't need to take a decision.
Or instead of having, let's say, 3 individual reads where you have the post, the hook outside, the post over the top, and then the hook over the middle, which he's never going to get to in most cases.
Agreed.
The hook on the sideline could have been deeper. The snapper could have run a quick out to that side.
Yes.
Now, when you're going to your first read, you have 2 reads in that window.
You read the corner. If the corner sticks, drops back with the hook, you could just dump it off.
You run a lot of isolation concept. But what's amazing is, and I'm actually going to give you credit, is you can read from 1 through 4 very quickly, which a lot of guys can't do specifically from lower divisions. But moving on to higher divisions, the game of the week this week was between Les Blancs du Nord and the Braves.
Les Blancs du Nord?
Yeah. I can't say the name. Stop. We're going to get to Lance Daniel in a second, but I want to talk to you a little bit about the game before we get Lance on the line, just because there's a couple of topics here I think it's just more comfortable for us to discuss.
Sure. Than,
you know, the game of the week guy. Braves win 25-14.
Yes. Not surprising.
Braves win with Matt Renea at quarterback, however.
A little bit surprising.
So, a couple of questions. We talked before the show about how Aaron Rodgers is basically throwing to a bunch of shopping carts and he makes the receivers look really good. Is this like the reverse Aaron Rodgers, that like the receivers are so good that Jonathan Taylor is a very good quarterback but is elevated because of who he has on the team?
I think, well, the Braves receivers are very good. Yes. I think that they help the quarterback, but they also... they're not necessarily the type of receivers that fit with every single quarterback. So if you would have to receive a core, UPs as individual, you will not be able to succeed because they don't run the
I
routes.
I think I would be better.
You would be better, yes, 100%. You know what I mean? Like, but you won't be able to make them as good as they are because they run...
But I'm not... This isn't like... I know that I'm not...
But
I'm saying within that tier of, let's say, Division 1, 2 quarterbacks,
yeah,
does almost anyone look... that good?
Yeah, it's the Braves offense run a lot of plays that are late breaking, and Myron knows how to read it and use it to his advantage. When you're just taking a quarterback out of a team and putting a new one for one game, receivers are not necessarily able to switch to a different scheme right away. So you need to sort of have a similar concept to be able to exploit it well. And a lot of these guys play with Matt René before. Mm-hmm. Like he played with Mathieu Lepage a few winters ago. And they had a really good season, so there's already chemistry there. They brought in a guy that's talented, and they were able to put on a show against the Bunnies.
I think Matt René, to me, is a perfect replacement for Jean Tamer. I think he's sort of like the junior leagues, Jean Tamer, in terms of like, A, the body type is very similar.
Yeah.
B, play calling is very similar as well.
Yeah.
And he may not execute exactly at the same level, but because the players are that much better, he executes at a higher level than he's typically executed in FPF. And I think it's actually a great fit, first of all.
Meyer also moves a little bit more than Matt René does.
Of course.
Which could help him.
Matt René can move as well.
Which, that's what I'm saying. It could help him because he's not necessarily mobile, but he could be. He doesn't necessarily use his legs that way. Maybe that could be something that could push him to the next level too.
The other thing I think that helps is he doesn't have a bunch of guys screaming in his face.
Yeah, I feel like that has been a problem for Matt René's teams in the past. Yeah. The last winter they had BYOB, I felt it was more of a calm team, and the success was there. They finished like 7-3 in the winter in Division 2. But before, they had those screaming matches with players. He used to quit on the team after like two drives. Like the guys would just quit, stop running the routes. Like, okay, you don't want to run the routes, I'll stop throwing the ball.
Seems like a recipe for success. So that's our opinion on one aspect of this, but perhaps we can get more as we talk to Lance Daniel, who was there filming the game. He's agonized over every angle of this for a few hours, I would imagine. We're going to get to talk to him about that. We're going to talk to him about Game of the Week, as well as some topics from his No Regard days, as well as anything else that comes to mind. And we'll see where the conversation takes us, as always. Lance, how's it going?
How you doing?
Hey, good, how's good. Going, man?
For those
I'm
who
good,
are uninitiated,
thank you guys for having me.
For the uninitiated, Lance Daniel is our Game of the Week guy, video extraordinaire. He is, and I say this with no pun intended, a master baker. He is a musician. He's a very talented individual. Lance, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's funny that you throw in the musician part, because I think that's kind of the secret recipe to Game of the Week. I'm a music artist and I make music videos, and flag football is basically a football game. And if you can transform it into a music video, that's like kind of like the key to what I do, without giving away too much of my details.
Of course. Yeah. Well, it's also been a source of arguments between you and Eagle, of course, when it comes to the music on Game of the Week. But I think we're slowly getting to a place where we're all seeing the same vision. So we'll do Lance. Because I don't like very formulaic interviews. I like this to be sort of like free-flowing. I've always said to me calling you
up. Yeah, 1,000%.
feel like you're drinking in a bar with your friends watching a game. So we'll
Let's have a conversation, please.
We'll ask we'll ask a bunch of things about a bunch of different topics. It may be completely out of order, but the questions will come to us as they fly. Firstly, let's start with your accomplishments at Game of the Week. When you saw, I know, for example, when I came to FPF, I had a vision for what I wanted for FPF media. And in terms of what we have in terms of the articles and the coverage there and the types of podcasts and visuals that we have with the podcast, that a lot of that was the vision that Eagle and I had. And I feel likewise, you kind of did similarly with Game of the Week. So let's talk about that moment where you're like, I think I can help this product. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Without blowing up your ego, I think that you being in the position that you're in was super, super instrumental in me and Game of the Week. And that's because you allow me to go outside of the usual parameters. Like when I make Game of the Week, right, a lot of songs have swear words. Like there's a lot of elements that get analyzed from you know, Alex and Peasy and Rob and everything. And Peasy, you give me a very, very long leash, you know what I mean? And also, I was a player, right? I played for No Regard. So when you're a player, like I see myself as not just a video editor, right? Like I'm a player first and then a video edit second. So as a player and as a football fan, I love football and I kind of understand what I would want to see as a player. Like I know what it's like to be mad at a referee for a call that I feel like was a bad call. And I tend to embellish those things in the video for the players to be able to be like, yeah, that's what I thought, or, oh, I saw it wrong. Okay, the referee did make a good call. But, yeah, that's all a part of it. It's all a part of it. I think the key really is if you had yourself a video editor that really didn't care or like football, but he just filmed it, I don't know if you would get maybe the in-depth that I try to present. Hopefully you guys, you know, recognize it.
Yeah, so one of the things, like, and I think Game of the Week, it's something that it's evolved over time, Lance, and
yeah,
there's been a lot of creative influences throughout time, but essentially it's always felt like watching game film, which to me, I said, well, why can't this be more of an entertainment product, which, you know, you coming along have helped us get there.
Actually, Lance, I do have a question for you to a degree. One of the things that you brought into the Game of the Week since the previous ones was kind of like the slow motion or the instant replay angle. And in a lot of times, it kind of brings up those controversial calls from referees. So I wanted to kind of ask you, because you see a lot of games and you go through the filming, what do you think of like the referees and, you know, do you think, you know, being able to watch it at a second time or slow motion or whatever influences our opinion of the referee's call? Whereas in real time, you would really have to be a bang, bang play.
Yeah. Slow motion is a very tricky thing to your eye because sometimes when I'm filming, a referee will ask, what do you think that call lands? And I will be 1000% sure. I'll say, no, I think he was in bounds. I'm sure he was in bounds. And, you know, referees are super critical of their own work, which is something I don't think they get enough credit for. They talk to each other a lot and really nitpick their own work, which is really cool. And after, when you kind of see a play that is super, super, like, magnified in slow motion, it's not what your eye is seeing. Mm-hmm. That's why when you see an NFL sometimes, you're like, oh, that has to be a catch. But when you slow motion it, you're like, oh, man, I didn't see that. Because slow motion messes with what actual time is. They say, what, if you catch a ball, you have to have it for a certain amount of time of possession. You have to make a football maneuver. There's a lot of elements to go into that catch, right? If you're watching it in fast motion, the amount of your time you're seeing it is slow. But when you slow it down even more, it messes with your timing a little bit, I think, for if something's a catch or not a catch. But for sideline feet inbounds, I think it's the greatest thing.
Which referee hates you?
I don't think any referees hate me. I love the referees.
Man, you have a better relationship with them than I do. I can tell you that much.
Dust a beat.
Same here.
I don't. No, I like all the referees.
I know you like them.
Leo and I have come a long way. I really respect Leo. He is a very stand-up human being. We had a lot of issues when I played for No Regard because, you know, I'm a player, and I would feel like the reputation that I made for myself would cause calls and certain things to go against me. And when I was only seeing Leo through the perspective of a player, but then when I worked for the league, I was a little bit hesitant to really like speak to him, but then getting to know him as a person before the referee and now seeing what he does as a referee, I kind of learned that it's a different dynamic when you're a player than when you're working for FPF, which I think was an interesting transition for me.
So Lance, as a, you've talked about it. You're a player. Used to be a player.
Did you guys see me? You guys didn't see me play the other day because
we did. I was there.
I shut Vinny down. I shut Vinny down. He had nothing on me. He had nothing.
I want you to throw
my first game after 4 years.
I want you to throw a little shade at somebody. So if you have to pick, who's your defensive player first of all? Who's the easiest guy to cover in FPF?
The easiest guy to cover in FPF. Well, after the snap, you're left or your right, so they're nice. If you have a quarterback that can hit you in stride, you're good.
Yeah, it's true.
I have to say Vinny, because I haven't played FPF in 4 years, and playing defense for, I'm only getting older, and I'm just saying, I'm not playing for 4 years. Corey Pecker looked at me and said, Lance, we need you, because he was short. And this is one thing that gets overseen with, like, flag football posts on a wall and things like that. I was in Corey's condo in Miami and was treated to an amazing time, and he is a great human being. When that man looks at me and says, Lance, we need you, and shorts are provided and flags are there, and I had my cleats because I had a somewhat heads up it might come up, I can't tell Corey no. When I was building the bakery with Stephanie, these friends, like, helped me. I can't say no. So I think I did pretty well. So I have to say, Vinny, he doesn't run routes too much. He just kind of waits for Sean to drop the ball off on him instead of doing the extra to get open.
Lance, I will say the amount of times I've been in Miami and been thankful that someone offered me a pair of shorts
is that something? I feel you.
I'll do something. I'm going to ask some questions that are going to be somewhat uncomfortable, but I'll reward you. So, because there's no better sales pitch than a happy, satisfied client. So every time you answer one of my difficult questions, with one of us who are all happy, satisfied customers of Stephanie's Bakery, we'll drop a promo for Stephanie's Bakery. So I'll start with...
Oh, man, money. Okay, let's do this.
I'll start with the most... Now, it has to be a satisfactory, real answer. It can't be political. I'm going to start with the most talkative one.
Man, you know me. Let's go.
I'm going to start with the most political, with the most asshole type question, because I am the biggest asshole in the room. What was it like when you got cut from No Regard? How did that conversation go? And how has your relationship been with KD and Travis since?
Misconception. I was never cut from No Regard. I lost the passion to play flag football because, like I said before, referee calls, and I felt like no matter how much I put in, no matter how much I invested into the league, I felt like I couldn't progress within my own, like, immature, you know. And then I feel like I grew out of that and I became the game of the week guy and I wanted to be a video editor. So No Regard, they're a team, but they've always been my friends, and they will all say, they've asked me, I think probably every single season since I've left, maybe not one, if I'd be willing to play a few games, and I never do it. I always say I'm retired until recently when I played. So I feel like I grew as a video editor, and now No Regard are in Division One, Tier One. I'm Game of the Week guy, so it's kind of like you branch off, but you see each other at the top.
So, Lance, that's actually going to be my question. This last week, FPF All-Stars played #NR, and All-Stars won 47-19. It has me reflect back to that first time where the FPF All-Stars/Montreal Finest/DA Finest challenged you guys in a matchup, and you guys played in, I think, the overnight tournament, and it was actually a tightly contested game. So I kind of want to just ask you in general, what happened to NR since then such that they can't compete anymore?
So much that they can or can't compete.
They can't compete. They lost by 30 points. What's going on?
Did you see who their quarterback was? Mario's a very good quarterback, but the chemistry, he's not Corey Pecker. He's not the person that No Regard has gelled with all this time. So going back to your question before about the overnight tournament when it was so close, NR, remember, was in Division 5D, and they played Montreal's Finest, the greatest dynasty in the business. The game was decided in the closing minutes, right? So now you branch over to now with no QB. It's a very different game, right?
So before I let Simon ask his question, I owe you an ad.
And Kevin Wyeth, oh my gosh. Like he had three incomplete passes. Let's not forget, they're playing the GOAT, okay? With Corey Pecker, the GOAT.
I'm trying to get you paid. You got to let me drop the ad when I drop the ad. Eagle will drop his after we finish the segment because I just forgot to say mine.
Yeah.
There was a weekend. I needed some sweets for my family. There is not a bakery further from my house than Stephanie's Bakery. I live literally on the other side of the island. It was a two-hour drive with traffic. I live in a part of town where I am surrounded by bakeries, but we wanted something a little different. I picked up some delicious Stephanie's Bakery cupcakes. Highly recommend it. They do custom orders. They do great work. And it couldn't be run by nicer people than Stephanie.
Appreciate that. Stephanie is definitely my better half. And Peasy, that's a testament to your character, because you have a lot of bakery choices, and without having like made a big order from us, you've tasted the product, but making your order, choosing us, I know that has a lot to do with knowing us as the people that we are, and also knowing that the product is very good. But yeah, we make custom design cakes for any occasion. Facebook.com/cupcakeMTL. That's Facebook.com/cupcakeMTL for all your needs, birthdays, anniversaries, weddings, baptisms, anything you need. You name it, we bake it.
All right, Lance. As the game of the week guy, you've been around for how many seasons now? Like 8 or 9 seasons at least, or something like that?
Funny, me and Rob had a conversation about this, discussing my Hall of Fame eligibility, and we concluded we were going to start it at 2012, because that's when I started filming championships for FPF. And I've been doing it every championship since.
That's a lot.
I think I'm Hall of Fame eligible.
So what was the worst game to film in your mind? Like the one game that you filmed that you regretted filming because it was either boring or lame or whatever?
Oh, man.
That's a very good question. One game that you like, you remember that you didn't like
that I was like, yeah, I did. I don't recall the teams, but you guys will know, because there was a huge fight at the end, and all the players all charged towards the corner, and I showed it for everybody. It was a Division 6 game, and I think younger players tend to let their emotions get the best of them. That game was so, like, pardon my, like, boring. It blow-minded me how such simplicity and, like, a boring game can cause players to get, like, that heated. I kind of thought that was embarrassing.
Yeah,
I showed it to you guys for a little bit, you know, because that's what I do as a Game of the Week guy. But that was kind of, like, it was a boring game. When you see something that's not tasteful for the league, it's, you know, you don't want that.
So here's the tough question time again, Lance, and then Simo will drop an ad for you. So I remember when I was on the NR beat, so to speak, I reported that Alex Holowak was dropped in favor of James Floriani as a quarterback of #NR. The team has since moved on to Corey Pecker. You were notably in favor of keeping Alex Holowak as quarterback. Can you take us through sort of what happened during that time and some of the conversations and what that was like?
Yeah, we call that the cursed season of no regard. Travis broke his leg. I injured my ankle. Darius, I don't remember what his injury was, but Alex was injured that game, and that's why Floriani had replaced him. And Demi was injured also that season. Demi broke his finger that season. Shout out to Warchief. And James Floriani had replaced Alex. And we were on such a losing streak at that point with all the injuries that we needed some kind of a spark, something that could maybe get us the playoffs, because up until that point, no regard had never not made it to the playoffs. So James ran with it. I was in favor completely of Alex at the time, but that's when sometimes you got to look in the mirror and say, what's your opinion? Kendall is the one, as the founding father of CEO of no regard, he's the one that's made them adapt from Division 5, 4, 3, 2 up until 1 with different moves. And now you see Corey Pecker in Division 1. You kind of have to, like, credit the person that built it, because it's not an accident that Norgard's been able to be so successful for such a long period of time.
Definitely. And the,
that's why I think Kendall, Hall of Fame, give it to him. Give it to Kendall before you give it to me as a contributor. And I mean that.
But and you're right, because, you know, Corey Pecker was a guy who wasn't really succeeding in the high divisions, and Norgard was a team not yet ready to move up, and so far it's worked. Simo, tell some people about some cake.
So these owners, Lions and Steph, they're a very honorable guy. We could talk about the fact that I won a bet, and he did pay his bet and made a cake for me. But there's one time I remember. There's one time I remember using. It was the FPF Junior Finals, and Stephanie dropped by to drop some cupcakes for the kids.
Yeah.
And if there's one thing I know about food, is that if food makes you happy, it's good food. And the look on the kids' faces when they ate the cupcakes, like, made me realize how good and, like, how what you guys do, how you what like you cherish what you do, you love what you do, and it reflects in the food and the cupcakes that you bring. And Stephanie was there, and to see how happy the kids were really made me realize how like serious your business is and how good what your product is and how well you do what you do.
Beautiful thing.
And that's the one thing that really shocked me. Well, it didn't shock me, but surprised me in a bit that to see how much happiness resolved from that little moment, what you guys could bring to
somebody. I could say right now I fall in love with my girlfriend every time that I see her make a cake, especially when it comes to the kid's third birthday, and then they chose that again for the fourth birthday and the fifth, and you see the graduation from Paw Patrol to Fortnite, and you see the same kid, the difference of what they like a year later, and the joy that she brings to families. Like, yeah, it's a sales pitch, but like it's a beautiful thing. Yeah, it really it is. People love cake. People love cake.
Lance,
Facebook.com/CupcakeMTL. Like with the page, please, and thank you.
Oh, it's good to give you a chance to do it at the end, Lance. Come on.
Hey, I'm ahead of the game, ahead of the curve.
Last question I got for you, Lance. So, you know, every now and then, you know, you and me, we understand the technical difficulties of capturing stuff. So I wanted to ask you, has there ever been a play that you've tried to film that ended up not working, either it's too shaky or you forgot to hit the record button, that was out of this world and you said to yourself, oh, I really should have got that on film?
Definitely. But I think that I have a very high standard for myself, and I tend to catch 85-90% of plays. Like, I borderline don't miss, you know. But the times that I do, I try to replace it with, like, I'll drop the music and make, like, a theatrical while I wasn't filming, and then go to the next play after just so I can compensate for the play that was missed. And sometimes if it's shaky, I'll eliminate the clip, but I always keep track of if there's a turnover on downs, on, like, let's say a fourth down, I don't want people to realize, oh, but that was only three downs, so I'll include the shaky clip because I knew it was a turnover on downs. But if it was a first down, then I'll just eliminate the shaky clip because you don't really need it because it was a first down anyways. You know what I mean?
And because I promised you a plug, so the opening weekend for Stephanie's Bakery, I actually had a dinner with my in-laws, and I decided to bring a dozen cupcakes from the bakery, knowing that it was opening weekend, knowing that
whatever. Can you drop a bomb for yourself, Alex? Can you drop a bomb for yourself?
Can I drop a bomb? I got one here somewhere, yeah.
I heard you dropped a bomb last week. Drop a bomb for yourself for doing that.
I got one. So yeah, I basically showed up at my in-laws with a dozen cupcakes, and they were amazing. So kudos.
Yeah, thank you, Alex. You've been a great friend to me since I've known you, man. So glad to make your occasion special.
Give us the Facebook address, Lance, one more time.
Facebook.com/CupcakeMTL. Facebook.com/CupcakeMTL. Like the page and support the product. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us, man.
If someone sees you at the field, White Gatorade.
Thank you for having me. Say that one more time.
If someone sees you at the field, White Gatorade?
Oh, man. Just this season, it's not about White Gatorade. Just tell me something that you appreciated that I did. A play that doesn't matter what season. I'll remember what it is. I appreciate how you caught that, whatever it is. I like feedback, good or bad. That's how I get better.
Thanks, Lance.
Thank you, guys. God bless you.
There we go. So that wasn't terrible. It was pretty good. I like Lance. He's an interesting guy. I like talking to interesting people.
He has a different view that we do on topics that makes it very, like, it's fun to talk to him for these things. He brings up points or points of view that we don't have. Mm-hmm. And it's fun to see that he sees it from a different angle.
Well, and that's the goal for the interviews, is we want to talk to people who also see games or people who play in games that have a different experience from we have completely. You know, I was hoping for a little more brutal honesty from the NR days, but...
Listen, you have to be politician about it.
He's doing all right, so...
You have to be a politician about it. No, I wasn't cut.
I guess. I was more... To be honest, I wasn't... That one I was expecting. I was expecting more, like, juiciness from the Alex Holowak.
I didn't get fired. I resigned with severance.
You mentioned Fortnite. You see that it's going cross-platform now?
That's pretty good, man. Like, I like the fact that you can finally play with your friends without having to buy the same console as them. So if you were dumb enough
that's
to
like
buy...
That's like the most rich guy thing ever. Like, I have to buy all these consoles. like, most people are lucky
like
to
when
have
you
one.
See your friends buy an Xbox, you're like, sucks. You made the wrong choice. You should have bought a PlayStation instead. Mm-hmm. Now we can't play together. Kind of sucks. Like, it's dumb that we have to buy the same game but can't play together.
I don't get Fortnite. Am I the only one? Like,
I
know that I'm the only one.
I can understand why people enjoy it, but it's not my style.
I need accomplishments.
Yes.
and there's no accomplishments.
Yeah. I don't winning, like the feeling.
But that's it.
I don't like the feeling of waiting in a queue for 3 minutes to then land, immediately die, and then stay in a queue for 3 minutes.
Oh, there's no queue nowadays, man. You instantly queue, which is
great. But still, by the time you start a match versus by the time you actually land, it's 3 minutes.
And then if you
immediately die, your game's done. But or anyways, you end up in the middle of nowhere, you spend 5 minutes collecting items, and then you die.
If you had to stand in queue to watch one FPF team this FPF Cup season, who would it be?
Well, that's a good question. Weird segment, but good question. I'm going to have to say my boys, man. Bandwagon Jean-Guy.
I like how you filibuster because you're not realizing that they made a transition.
No, I was thinking. Jean-Guy, man. So it's so easy to hate on Jean-Guy, but you can't in this season.
You can't.
Really They're playing really well.
I've been the most critical of Jean-Guy since the start.
Since forever.
Yeah, since forever.
I was not a big fan of Jean-Guy before. I'll be honest with you. Right before the dismiss sort of thing, they stopped playing. They were terrible human beings. Like, they were swearing at referees, telling other players to go fuck themselves. All these things you shouldn't do in a recreational sport. And ever since they came back, which was either spring or fall,
I believe it was this past spring, yes,
the nicest guys, very quiet.
So I think that comes to maturity. And I will say, I've noticed that in Division 6 and Division E, a lot of these guys come in hot.
Yeah.
Because they don't know the community, they don't have respect for the community. Like, at some point you've played against or played with everyone in FPF. So it's like there's trash talking, but then there's a point of like, well, like, so what there's trash talking, and then there's losing my mind and acting the fool. Like,
yeah, there's one thing to tell me like, oh, like, I made a play on you, I'm better than you are, and there's another thing to just lose your mind because you're losing by 20.
Yeah,
buddy, you're losing, calm down, you know, like, the game's over, you don't have to flip out about it. And ever since they came back, they've been like different class acts. Now I only hear good things about Jean-Guy, and this season they're winning. They're having a great season, and I'm on the bandwagon. It's going to maintain back to back weeks where opponents cannot score against Jean-Guy.
Eagle, bring up the schedule. Can Jean-Guy go 8-0?
Yes.
Read us the game. So we're not knowing the games.
I don't care.
All right, that's fair.
Bandwagon, that's baby. Fair. I'm worse with Jean-Guy than Jim is with the Seattle Seahawks.
So, Simon, having no information, may actually be right. So next week they have Les Amateurs de Sac. Win. The week after that they have Raw Sauce. And then the week after that they have Teen Stars.
Oh, that could be that could be an interesting.
So
game.
I think the next 2 weeks can be W's. The last week might be the tricky one.
Maybe, yeah. But
Teen Stars are fast.
Yeah, but their rusher is very good. Jaggi's rusher, Simon Laporte, man, he's a very talented rusher.
It's the speed on defense that concerns me.
We'll see.
Because Christophe Chantrain doesn't throw the ball very hard.
No, but we'll see. I think there's something there, man. There's a special season for Jaggi.
They have two shutouts in two straight weeks. Can this continue? Or much like the team on the other side, will they get now the Simon Dagenekers, as Bud Knights once called the best defense? Allowed 31 points this game.
I mean, that lasted like 6 days.
Yeah.
No, man. I don't think they're gonna be able to shut out more teams. Maybe there's Amateurs de Sac next week, but that's more because Simon Laporte is gonna make Les Amateurs de Sac quarterback look dumb. It's just, he's such a good rusher and so disruptive that it's tough to play against. But other than that, I don't think Jean-Guy's still gonna win. They're gonna go 8-0. So I don't really care if they don't shut out teams.
Technically, they're gonna go 7-0-1.
I know. I'm a bit disappointed by the tie. But yeah. Still undefeated.
Still undefeated.
So that's all that matters.
Voodoo took on Greendale Human Beings. And Greendale Human Beings is usually a team I'm very excited to see.
I'm confused.
I'm less confused, but let me hear why you're confused as to their lack of success. They lost in this game 27-26. Just a bit of context. Voodoo won on a last play touchdown by Etienne Vianco.
So it's not so much that Voodoo won that confuses me. It's the low scoring game, 27-26. So I feel this really helps Voodoo's. This is what they want, right? They're not going to score 50 on teams. But Greendale Human Beings, in the past few seasons, even years, they've been a high scoring offense that scores 40 against whoever they play against. What's going on with Greendale Human Beings' offense? The team itself is similarly the same. Yet Danny Elward doesn't seem to put up these 7 touchdown, no interception nights again. Like, he's struggling. 3 interceptions against Voodoo.
2.
And it's wasn't 3.
K had 3.
No.
And which is surprising in and of itself that he had 3 interceptions and they won. Yeah.
But even 2, it's a lot for Danny. Like, we've grown to see him as a very He doesn't have a lot of turnovers in games. He's a very good quarterback, but the season's not been the same. Is the magic gone?
So you thought it was magic this entire time?
Well, no, but you know what
aren't
I mean by
magic. Grown ass adult.
You know what I mean.
Well, I have a because I played against them this year.
Yep.
I have sort of some idea as to why.
Okay.
I'm curious as to your thoughts. I know I'm deflecting your question. I just mine's very they're concrete and cool. Boring, so I want to give you a chance to entertain the people at home.
I feel there's a chance that us talking about Greendale Human Beings and their playbook every single week could hurt them.
So why is Joey Taylor still so effective?
But maybe Joey's better at his playbook than Danny is. Because, again, it's
I was gonna say, one of the things
it is Joey's playbook.
But I was going to say that like for a while we're like, oh, is Danny Aylward better than Joey Taylor? I think that Joey Taylor, the key has been, once the book got out on Joey Taylor, he adapted.
He did.
The book is out on Danny Aylward. It's time for him to adapt, and then we'll see how he adjusts to that.
Yeah.
You know what? I actually think the problem here is Danny Aylward trying to overcompensate, because I would say...
Small?
Well, kind of.
He has a big dude.
So Joey Taylor, for example, right? He runs his play, and whether it's a success or a failure, he runs the play. Whereas Danny Aylward, let's say he doesn't see what he likes off of first read. Now he starts to try and extend the play. Now he starts to try and move. Now he starts to try and take off, which for a long time we thought was a benefit, basically a difference of his style over Joey Taylor's. But as you move up in divisions, you start paying for making those types of decisions because the rushers are better, the coverages are better, and you try and, do those throws on the run to a guy. You know, people are baiting exactly that or jumping routes and everything. So Taylor doesn't do that. He dumps the ball off. If it's not there, he puts it in the ground or in the curtain or God knows what and makes those safe plays, whereas Aylward tries to overcompensate, puts it on his shoulders, and ends up making mistakes that cost him games.
The thing is, what I've noticed, coming into the game against them, at that time, 4 weeks into the season, I think they played three games though, but it was 4 weeks into the season, they had only completed passes to three different players,
yes.
One of which wasn't there every week, Danny McPhee. Hopefully we'll get a chance. I had some good questions for Danny. Try to get him for next week. It was his brother, Brandon Aylward, and Alex Joltepuff, who were excellent receivers.
Yes.
So when I saw that, I said, okay, this is what we're doing. We were only six that night. I said, guys, we're playing man every single play. We're putting our three best guys on their three best guys and dare you to throw against Pease on a receiver you're not comfortable throwing to. Dare you throw to... Jean-Sébastien Roussy for the receiver you're not comfortable throwing to. And he didn't.
Well, you also add the great pieces to match up against them.
Of course.
So Anthony Adonna is no...
But he was rushing.
That's interesting.
It was Alex Noel.
Also not bad.
On
underrated player.
Yeah, on Danny McPhee. So speed on speed. It was
Willpower.
Brandon Aylward on Anthony Adonna. And it was Willpower on Alex Joltepuff. So let's see if your best three guys can beat our best three guys.
That's right.
And if you look at this game, I mean, if I had to tell you, do you pick Patrick Saint-Amand and Etienne Vaillancourt or Alex Joltepuff and Brandon Aylward to put as your top two on your team? Who would you take?
They're very
depends
different
on
players.
The system. They're very
if
different. It's my system, it's the Greendale Human Beings guys because they run the same system. It's literally the reason Etienne Vaillancourt does not play for Points Per Power anymore is he doesn't like the system. It doesn't work. It doesn't fit. It doesn't. Simon was right. I thought he was going to be a good fit. Simon said he's going to be a bad fit, and we saw that. But so it depends on the quarterback. But I think both teams play for quarterbacks that work.
Yeah. Yes,
and have a receiving quarterback that works for that system.
Also, Brandon Aylward is very good, but so is Pat Saint-Amand. Like I feel Brandon Aylward will work in any system.
Yes. Well, just like Pat Saint-Amand will work in any system.
Well, I was going
to
say
that said, the rest of the team, if you switch quarterbacks, both the quarterbacks are useless.
Oh yeah, yeah
Frank
yeah, yeah.
K could not play for that team, and Danny Aylward could not play for.
And just in this game, Saint-Amand and Vaillancourt combined for 16 receptions, 155 yards, and all four TDs.
Maybe somebody
and
should come.
Aylward and Joltepuff combined for 14 receptions, 134, and three TDs. So if you look at the rest of the team, they're contributing very little in this one.
There's another thing with Danny Aylward. Is he tends to read middle out. So what happens is that a lot of times...
But his playbook is also middle out.
Yes, but... So Mike Adonna and I, for example, run the same system. The first look for us is the sideline throw because if that's open, you want to throw that right away because you can't throw it when it's already 20 or 30 yards on field, especially if you don't have a strong arm. So Danny Aylward, that's not his strength. So he's afraid to throw those sideline fades. He's afraid to throw sort of skinny posts to the sideline. And the reason why is because... He he doesn't read them early. He reads them as the last, you know, third or fourth read. And so for that reason, you know, he's that's why he's only going to the three receivers, the two slot receivers and snapper. However, I will say I saw Cecil Carrero making three catches this game. That's a good sign for Greenville Human Wings.
If you were the GM, not the quarterback, you're the GM for the Bruins, not the hockey team, the F-15.
He's getting paid.
About to make some money. GM for the Bruins. Do you move next season in the fall, in the winter, considering the success right now? Do you keep Mathieu Wiemé as a quarterback, or do you go back to Gabe Wiseman?
So can I use my knowledge of the team as well?
Yes, but you cannot have both.
I only said one thing.
I was thinking, can I have Wiseman as a receiver? No.
No, because he likely won't fit in the division that they're going to play in. Also, if they can fit him, they should definitely use him as a receiver.
Yeah, for sure.
But I was going to say, knowing the situation with the Bruins is, Gab Wiseman joined the team literally as a mercenary free agent.
Yes.
He's not a part of the team's core. They were dissatisfied with the quarterback play. He posted, I think, on the Facebook wall saying, hey, if any Div 6 teams want a quarterback, I want to throw. And then he decided to do so. So kudos to him. Glad that he jumped in and did it.
He also taught them a lot of things, right? The team is different now.
They learned a lot from having him. That said, if Mathieu Wiemé is a guy who can be in your core and can be someone you can count on moving forward, then I say go with the guy who's going to be on your team for seasons and seasons to come.
Well, this season, the only reason Wiseman's not on this team is because fall year you're only allowed to play one. You had to choose between Diablos and
I understand,
Bruins.
But if it ever happens where you need to choose again, I'd rather have the quarterback who you can have full time.
Yeah, but that's when next winter you could have, technically you could have both. You have to choose which one you want as a quarterback. If you're in charge of this team, who do you pick?
I was trying. I would go with Mathieu Wiemé. Okay. Because again, team building long term. But on top of that, he's thrown 7 touchdowns twice this season.
Like 3 times. He's playing really well, man.
How many times have you seen a quarterback in a low division for a low division team come up and do that right away? I can think of basically Joey Taylor, Fred Morissette, both of them pre-cap, by the way.
There's a few guys. There's a few guys.
And who else? Anton Sakis was the third one I thought of.
There's
happening before the cap era. Yeah. Since the cap era, we haven't seen that much.
There's a few, but they're rare, and usually it's a fluke season. Keep forgetting his name. It's the guy that used to play with the Doug McKernan, Sammy Begg core, play quarterback for them.
But we knew him though. Outside FPF.
Sorry,
Chris Paceno.
Yes, Chris Paceno.
We knew him from playing.
He's a very good receiver DB, yeah. But he wasn't necessarily a quarterback. Came in at like a 60 touchdown season.
But like when a guy whose name we don't recognize, I'm saying.
Oh yeah.
Like who's another guy?
The quarterback for Air Force One.
Michael Soleimani.
Also.
As well.
There's a few guys, but I agree with you. It's a very rare instance.
Yeah, there seems to be like one a year, not even per season.
7 is
a
lot of touchdowns. Yeah, like if you really break it down, like you're very confident in yourself and you're throwing a lot of touchdowns because you don't necessarily get 7 possessions, and if you do, you score on every single one of them. It's a rare feat.
The Warriors. We talked about Michael Soleimani.
Yeah,
they win 34-33. It's a tight game. What's wrong with the Warriors' defense? That used to be sort of their calling card.
They used to be a very aggressive, very disruptive defense, very loud, but they sort of steered away from that over the recent, they had problems with the referees and the league itself, and a lot of guys got suspended, and now they're a very quiet, very laid-back team, and I feel like that's taken away from what made them very good defense before, is they got into receivers' heads, and they were very vocal about what they wanted
to
do.
But does that work as you move up?
A little
bit. Because everyone's vocal when you move up.
Yeah, but it still works because you still can get in people's heads, right? Like, you play against guys like Vince Nardone. You could talk to him. You could chirp him, and it works. Yeah. It still works against certain players, but that's what really worked for them earlier, and they also lost a few key pieces defensively. Not the guys with the highest stats, the score sheet flashy guys, but they still got the job done. Sometimes if you get one tackle in the game, it's maybe because you shut down the guy in front of you and he didn't do anything. Right? It's the Teddy Frenette effect. Mm-hmm. Guy finished the season with like 9 tackles in Division 1. Oh, he must suck. Actually, he's like the best DB there was. Mm-hmm. Just people don't go his way. So it could be the same instance. You lost one of your best defenders, and now you're sort of struggling to match the pieces together.
I think another thing that a lot of teams do, especially on defense, is that you have a system and it works, right? So you play, let's say you play cover two, because it's a pretty standard one. So you have your two guys who are your safeties and your three guys who are your flats. And you win, you know, you go 5-5, you go 6-4, you go 4-6 in a season. You know, people score points on you, but not that bad. And you're like, oh, our defense is good. And then next year, you get blown out every game, and it's because you start getting to quarterbacks that understand what you're doing and start calling plays against it. And you go, well, how did you miss that ball? And then you don't really understand, well, there's two guys I had to pick up, and I picked the wrong one or whatever. So you can have that one year where your defense feels good, and then immediately afterwards, you do the exact same thing, and it's not working anymore.
One thing I will say is they've relied on athleticism, and they play a very conservative, static defense. So what happens is that, like I said, we were talking about, we did some defensive breakdown before where you want to shade and release and you want to move into different zones. You want to shoot gaps. They don't do that. They rely on athleticism and beating guys to the ball, especially on deep balls.
That doesn't work anymore.
As you move up, that's not enough. In fact, most of the interceptions in higher divisions come in the flats.
Yes.
Because quarterbacks just throw the ball safer. They throw it to the sideline where it's their guy or nobody, where they scheme a guy so he's wide open on the sideline.
Or they put it deep enough that it's either you beat him or nobody gets it. Yeah.
Exactly. And I feel that that's one of the issues here. Now, you asked a question when we're writing the script. Did we overrate them? Which is, I always find that funny because, like, we're the ones rating them in the first place and then deciding that we overrated them.
Yes.
So are they over, under, or properly rated? I gauge properly.
I feel they're still a little bit overrated. We had, like, they had a very strong early franchise. So their first two seasons, they were, like, destroying teams in the
divisions. I want to say Michael Soleimani had 96 touchdowns in his first two seasons.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's very good. So they had a few seasons. The first, I think, two seasons, they won quarterback of the year also. And then in the first season, I think they went 10-0. And then they lost in playoffs. But they had strong seasons that made them powerhouses in the division they were in.
Yeah.
So they were sort of the teams that everybody expected to be one of the strong teams moving up. And after back-to-back seasons playing really well and having like 10-0 seasons or 9-1, you feel like they should keep being this good. But then the few players moved around, not the same core. They don't have the same. They don't win. They don't finish season 10-0 anymore. We still expect them to be powerhouses, I guess. So we're expecting too much out of them.
So I would say then that when they, if you think of the word rated, and think of what that means.
Yes,
they were perhaps underrated in Division 6 and Division E, especially the second season they were allowed to continue in the lowest division.
And then if we've rated them too high afterwards and they were forced to move up and now they're losing because they're too high, they are overrated based on the proper exactly. term.
But I think
the word.
Now they're properly rated in that going 10-0, you're not necessarily playing in the right division for your skill level.
100%.
So if you're going sort of 5-5, 6-4, 4-6.
You're at the right.
You're kind of where you're supposed to be.
Yeah.
I think one thing that's interesting that François Martin does in his article is that he takes your position and takes your matchups and figures out whether you basically should have won that game or not. So Warriors in this case were ranked 27th, but if you actually put them on the list, they end up 31st. So you can say his system's flawed or whatever it is, but it actually kind of lines up where, yeah, maybe they're a little bit overrated, but not all that much. This is kind of where they're supposed to be.
His system is flawed.
So I like to think, there's something I like about Francis Martin's article. It's I call it douche of the week. It's so when you're writing the article,
I know exactly what you're going to say.
And you continuously pick your performance as the quarterback of the week.
And your receiver that you fed.
And a receiver that you fed on purpose. And part of that is that you know you're playing in a division that's too weak for the team that you put in.
If it's a DB, I get it. Like you have no
control of that.
You don't, if your defense, if one of your DBs play well.
But also if you're a writer. No, but like even if it's your receiver, fine. You can go just on statistical merit. If you're quarterback, you got to be some kind of douche. That's actually that segment from now on in his article is some kind of douche. We'll read it every week that François Martin is the leading quarterback in some kind of douche.
So speaking of François Martin, they played SWAT this week, which was one of the games we thought would be one of the best games of the week and probably the best game of the tier.
It's going to be the closest game. I don't know if it was one of the best.
Fair.
Close doesn't mean best. It looks sloppy as hell.
27-26, as close as it gets. Is this a case of both teams having a better team than their quarterbacks?
Yes.
Like, is François Martin the weakest player on this team?
Yes, but that's a good team. Like,
it is a very good team.
As a captain of a team, that's what you want.
100%. You want to be the worst player. I don't know if he'll admit
it, but that's...
No, but what I do.
Yeah. Same with everyone in this room, by the way.
Yeah, you want to be the worst player on your team.
Yeah, because that means you have a good team. Or better than you.
Better than you, so you're playing above your level.
Also, it's easier to bench yourself in core situations because you're like, no, you're better on the field as opposed to get off the field.
Yeah.
I'm good at doing both, actually.
Not really good at benching myself. Maybe I should work on that.
Yeah, seriously. Corey Kennedy, quarterback of the year.
Oh, I have a funny story about that.
We'll get that. It'll be your final thought.
Okay. So.
We still got to do 90 seconds of heat.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Did you prepare 90 seconds of heat?
No, but I could think of something. Well, I'll think about it now.
How terrible it would be to let him ad-lib it.
If we give him a topic, it might not be that bad.
Oh, I could. Oh, I try that. We'll try that.
It was your topic, actually.
We'll try that. Give me a topic and I'll go off. But make sure it works with me.
I have a topic. Okay. It'll work in two ways.
Okay, it's fine. Both quarterbacks played bad in this game, right? And Diablo's against why? Is it because they're playing better defenses than they used to? Or is it because they're finally playing a team that is their own level?
I think they're playing a team where the athletes on SWAT match up with the athletes on Diablo to a degree. Sean Haney and Isaiah Allard are very difficult to cover and very difficult to deal with in coverage.
I need to interrupt you again. Isaiah Allard got another two interceptions and a sack. What the
As a rusher. What's his total? I'm very curious.
Of interceptions?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure he's leading tier two.
So, Diablos.
And that's another thing is like speedy rushers don't do anything for San Martin. Tall rushers have an impact.
Let's be good journalists here. Diablos were missing Chalvet, who's probably
their Isaiah Lard is leading the tier two with five INTs.
That's funny. That's a rusher. That's more than one a game.
That's kind of awesome.
So Diablos were missing Gabois, man. They were missing Chalvet, who's their leading receiver at the moment. So they had Jean-Félix Dalloz sub in for them for a second week. Yes, but it's also not the same, right? Like, he's as talented player. Like,
different people are not the same people.
Yeah.
That's an excellent analysis.
So, but they were missing a few guys. The team was not at its best. So there's something to say there, too. Like, it's the same. I feel like it's similar to SWAT, where they're very top-heavy. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about Sean Haney, we talk about Isaiah Lard. But when you look at the entire team, there are weaknesses there that you should exploit. Mm-hmm. So I feel Diablo is exactly the same. The top three, four players are very, very good and maybe too strong for this tier, but the bottom half is being overcompensated for.
That's fair. But that's how they fit in tier two, right?
Yes.
Like that's the bargain they make. You have 90 seconds of heat for us?
Do you have a topic for me?
I have a topic as Eagle cues up the music. Eagles notice that there's a lot of ties. So I want you to rant about
ties
that you wear, ties in FPF, and possible overtime solutions.
For FPF?
Yes.
That's interesting. Possible overtime solutions in FPF.
What looks worse for a big guy? Bow tie or skinny tie?
Oh, skinny tie looks disgusting.
Yeah, because you look like a retired NFL dumb player who didn't take care of himself.
It makes your belly look fatter.
Yeah.
It's just dumb. Don't wear that. Wear the bow tie. People look at your neck.
Yeah, but you also look like a fat monkey trainer.
Yeah, but
Simo, you ready?
Nobody has a fat neck.
Yes. All right, we're going to go in 3, 2, 1.
So I have this thing against ties where it always falls in the soup. I never bought the clip. Pisses me off. I don't want to wear ties. Ties in FPF. Man, first of all, it's super annoying as an analyst because you predict the game. You always lose. Sucks. Why do you tie games? Who goes for ties? You're down 7. Don't go for 1, man. Don't be a P word. I don't know if I'm allowed to say
penis.
It.
Penis.
Yes. No. It's not the right one. Overtime solutions. We should have like a... Because what we do in overtime, we do something in FPF. We should have like a 2-minute drill where you score as many points as you can in 2 minutes. And the other team has the exact same thing. And whoever scored the most wins. So rush back to the ball and sprint back and forth could be interesting. What was the other tie? There's a third tie. I forgot. Ties in the NFL are also pretty boring. Like, I don't remember seeing a tie in the last like 10 years and we had 3 this season. I'm very confused what's going on. Yeah, what was the other tie? You added the third one that you forgot. The tie in the soup, the tie in FPF, the solution for a tie. I know that's me. That's just me being me.
The country?
Thai
food.
Thai food.
Oh, yeah, I love Thai food, man. The only thing that I don't like about Thai food is the next day. It's basically what you had today. Is you realize, maybe I should have chosen medium spicy.
My omelet was way too spicy this morning.
Yeah, man, it's terrible. Usually when I go to Thai places, they ask, do you want spicy or not? I usually say yes. Mistakes. You should always say, nah.
I have the opposite. I like rip my face off and I deal with it.
Yeah, but then the next day, man. It's the next day. It's not the same day. I don't care.
There we go.
It's always next day.
Always the next day.
Always the next day.
Always the next day. Let, come with one prepared, please, next week. It's 3 weeks to try to get this segment right.
We should have.
Games of the week.
Games of the week.
Speaking of segments we don't prepare for.
I don't have that loaded, so you can filibuster for a second.
Hey, what's going on with Free Vini? Ever since we took the hashtag off, they've been terrible.
Yeah, no hashtag, no swagger, no glory.
Sean Averin benched. Did Sean Averin bench himself this week?
He should have.
After like a bunch of interceptions, all the whack play
he
quarterback.
He did play like the ninth best quarter, the 10th best quarterback in line, though. He did play that.
Is he finally the 13th quarterback in tier one?
I think he might be. The team that Simo once considered the best defense in FPF, Bud Knights take on the Bruins.
In FPF, wow. Bruins, man. I'm done with Bud Knights.
Okay.
Bruins. Gotta go Bruins.
Because?
Matsuri Wiman is going to throw another seven.
Bruins are playing well.
Fresh Lungs versus Teen Stars.
Teen Stars, they're better. We thought they were shit because they didn't show up to games, but they're actually pretty good.
They're just irresponsible. Eagle?
Yeah, I'm going to go Teen Stars in this one. I think this is going to be a tight game, but I don't think Fresh Lungs can beat Teen Stars.
Replacements against the team named after the contraceptive that can't be replaced, Trojans.
Wow, that's like far-fetched. Give me Trojans.
This can go either way, but
correct,
I think
that's how games work. It can also end in a tie.
No, I think both teams actually have a chance of winning this game, but I'm going to go Trojans because I think replacements are a little bit too inconsistent.
Trailer Park Boys against Raw Sauce.
Raw Sauce.
Sauce.
To get those games, man, sometimes they don't look great, and then the following week they score 40. We don't really understand why.
Sauce.
Lambo's Pajamas, McDo.
McDo! I love Lambo's Pajamas, but McDo's was better.
Gotta go McDo, Pajamas, you let me down last week.
Next time I started the sack, Jean-Guy.
Jean-Guy.
It's the easiest. Jean-Guy, man, going 7-0-1. We'll call it 8-0.
Do you actually think they'll do it?
I actually think they will.
You think they're going to be Teen Stars last week?
Yes. I hope Jean-Guy plays in the finals because I want to be like cheering for them from the sidelines.
Broken ankles against Grabrouge.
Oh, Grabrouge. Do we ever have the confirmation of somebody on Grabrouge suspended?
No, no one's suspended.
They said...
I'm going to go Grabrouge.
They just tried to cut one of their guys. He wasn't very good. Like, bro, you're suspended. Never come back.
Did somebody not show up last week?
Our friendship is suspended.
Yeah, I'm going to go Grabrouge on this one, too.
Man, that would be funny to do. Eagle, you're suspended.
Dream Breakers, Bulldogs. Bulldogs 0-4, by the way.
I know, but they only lost by 1 point last week. I think this is the game that Bulldogs win and go 1-4.
I'm going to take Bulldogs on this one, too.
Los Bandidos, Supernovas.
Los Bandidos. I think they have the speed to match up against Los Supernovas.
I don't think Bandidos can put enough points up, Supernovas.
Did you call them Los Supernovas?
Maybe.
Hawks.
Los Novas.
Hawks, easy W. Sheesh.
Sheesh. W's.
The
too
plus
easy.
Minus is 50 points because easy W will win 50 to nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, to nothing? Like, Hawks won't score?
Correct.
Nah, they'll score one touchdown.
Okay. I don't agree. Unknown Talent, Los Avocados.
Unknown Talent's good, but not that good. I think I'm going to stick with the Avocados.
Same. Warriors take on the potentially quarterbackless X-Men.
Explain.
Read my article for the explanation.
God damn it.
Why do you always do that?
Because I want people to read the article. It's sales, man. Don't you? I wish you knew something about sales.
So wait, then it would be Kevin Bustani?
Boost.
That's not bad.
You do lose Bustani as a receiver, so that's not great. Who are they playing?
Warriors.
I switched page already. Warriors.
Give me the Warriors.
No, I'm going to take X-Men, regardless. Even with Bustani.
All right. Yeah. Pigeon Squad lockdown. I'm going to go... Pigeon Squad's got some flaws, but if you make... Their
so does lockdown.
Yeah, but I was going to say, the flaws are as such with lockdown that I expect them to make more mistakes and capitalize less frequently than Pigeon Squad. So I think like it'll be like two interceptions each kind of thing, but Pigeon Squad will score more frequently on the interceptions than Lockdown
will. Story of my life.
Yeah.
I think that Lockdown's going to win by a very small margin. They're going to be able to have an extra possession. And they're going to make mistakes. But
speaking of small margins, there's a new dwarf planet.
What?
NASA.
A planet of dwarves or a dwarf planet?
Oh, that'd be awesome.
It's a really small planet. What would you call? What would you, if you had to name it, what do you call it?
Small a dwarf planet. A small planet? I don't know. I have to think about that.
Dinklage.
That's not bad. I have to think about it.
I'm going to go with eagle.
Ayo!
What's the power of voodoo?
How did we not come up with that?
I don't know.
I had, that's why I forced the joke in the game of the week.
It's pretty good. I still think the dwarf planet's better than a planet of the
dwarves. One speed power voodoo. I can't pick it.
OSP.
Yeah. It's sad. True.
I don't agree. Mean Machine versus SWAT.
SWAT.
SWAT. Yeah, I don't think Golov stands a chance against a Lard. No. How many more picks?
Two more.
Le Flamand Fou against Le'Veon La Vida Loca. By the way, Daniel Golov, 14 interceptions so far.
I refuse to say that team name, so Le Flamand Fou.
Yeah, LFF.
They might be the best team in Tier 2, though.
Who? Le'Veon?
They just beat Junkyard Dogs, so something to monitor.
I don't really care. I will not say that team name.
Junkyard Dogs, Diablos. Is this another easy game for the overpowered Diablos with the underpowered quarterback?
I don't think it's going to be an easy game, but I think we overrated Junkyard Dogs. We taught about their success in the spring season. It's a very different roster, and this one has a lot of problems.
Like anger management.
unless Jason Rossi has a flawless 6-touchdown game, they won't be able to keep up.
I'm going to go with Diablos. What are the chances of Georges Livoyer getting blasted into the curtains by an oncoming Junkyard safety?
If he shows up from behind, it'll be Jordan Rossi.
If he shows up,
yeah.
He wasn't there for the last two games or so.
Outlaws versus Greendale Human Beings.
Human Beings.
I'm being impressed by Outlaws week after week, so I'm going to go Outlaws on this one.
Also, keep in mind that Outlaws run vaguely the same offense as One Speed Power that beat Greendale Human Beings two weeks ago. So
it's mostly your defense, the one.
That's also true. Yeah. Also true. Internet issues.
Keyport Lockstars, Sweat and Beers.
Oh, Keyport Lockstars, Sweat and Beers, a mess.
Yep, same thing. Dirty Dogs versus Braves.
Dirty Dogs, Braves.
Yay. Hashtag NR2HD.
Hashtag NR2HD. It depends if Corey's there. I'm assuming Corey Pecker is going to be present. So hashtag NR, but it's going to be really close.
Yeah, I'm also going to go with 2HD.
Sorry, guys, I
didn't go with
2HD.
I'm taking 2HD.
That's okay.
The internet won't load.
But you can say I will also because I didn't pick that.
But you should. STL versus the hashtagless Free Vinny.
Oh, STL by 20.
Yeah, I'm going to go STL on this one. Ooh, FPF All-Stars, Conspiracy.
Easy. FPF All-Stars by 20.
I know. I'm just trying to figure out how frustrated Lazara is going
to be.
Lazara
guaranteed a win last week, and they won by 5.
Are Conspiracy not a top-tier team?
They are not.
I don't think they fall within the top four. I think if they end up in tier one,
they're the perfect second tier team. Yeah. They're perfect. If they were ranked like 7 or 8, they're gonna have they're gonna play in the finals. If they rank anywhere above 6 or above, they'll get blown out of the water.
And in the last game, Les Banlieusards versus Lightweight.
Who?
We can't say it.
Banlieusards. It's not complicated.
Banlieusards.
There you go. It's not You both speak French.
You know why? It's because the N, the L, the I, the E, the U, and the S are squeezed letters. And so I'm just like...
Okay, so say Balier and then Zal.
Balier Zal.
There you go. So easy.
Peace, what you got on this one?
I got to pick it in the article.
I'm going to go with Lightweight, 3 wins in a row.
Well,
it's Lightweight game?
Yeah.
They're playing Balier Zal?
Yeah.
I think this is the game, Simon. Why, are you throwing?
It's not. I'm not here.
Who's throwing?
François Raymond. He's back for two games.
Okay.
He's also going to play defense. So that's
yeah, but I think Banlieusards is defense.
So what, you guys are going to play a 4-1 with him deep safety?
Check that.
Depends who calls it.
Final thoughts, gentlemen. You had something.
Did I?
Yeah.
No, you said keep it for final thoughts, but I forgot what it was.
So talk about Halloween candy.
Halloween candy. First of all, it's like pure joy in a wrapper. That sounds so wrong. But also, I don't care.
Also, the Trojans.
Yeah, Eagle also eats too much candy. It's disturbing.
I love it.
But Eagle, for your final thoughts.
I went to Walmart, and because I usually get office candy for the entire office. I got 5 boxes of like 100 each.
Okay.
It was like $90.
Okay, so you got
ripped
off.
And in my mind, I'm like, I should really expense this.
You got ripped off. Jean Coutu, man. $10 for
Costco,
a box. Yeah, most likely, but if you don't have a card, Jean Coutu was like a box of 100 for like $9.
But what type of ones are you getting?
No, but they were all like the ones that they had was.
Nah, you're not getting the good ones then.
I'm telling you, it's the good ones. I buy all the candy.
Jean Coutu's like, where I buy it. Bars, yes. And O. Henry's.
Yes. And then there's also there's pieces. A new one with like sweet tarts and Skittles and something else.
Yeah.
Laffy Taffy's. I hate Laffy Taffy's, but sweet tarts are amazing.
It's because you're not funny.
I guess.
Eagle, talk to us about Montreal at that.
So if you guys don't know, for the months of, I think it starts in November actually, officially.
Yep.
A whole bunch of restaurants in Montreal are offering a special where you can go and basically taste their menu, do like a tasting menu, table d'hôte style, for three meals usually. You know, like appetizer, main course, dessert. So it's at a reasonable price and everything. I think it goes either like $30 or $40 or something.
It's $23, $33, or $43.
Exactly. I think like brunch is cheaper.
$17
for brunch. Yeah. So what you can actually do is, you know, for example, if you want to go to Europea and not pay $500 a person, you can go now. So go ahead and book that online. Check the list of restaurants.
There's anything on there that's caught your attention, Eagle?
I want to go check out Manitoba. So that's definitely one of them. I think Toque is on the list as well, which I want to go check out.
Yeah, Toque is on the list, definitely with Toque. I noticed.
But call now. Call like yesterday.
Yeah. Impasto is on the list. Michael Forgione's
place. Infatano 2 is also really good nearby.
Michael Forgione is a grad of Pius 10, so I always promote his place. Not on there because it's cheap enough. It's Chez Toussignan as well. He also owns that place. Definitely do check that out. I also got a little bit of a teaser rumor that I know will interest a couple people in this room, or maybe some people to the show. I was in a meeting today where they talked about the upcoming Italian restaurant opened by Antonio Park.
Oh.
So
teaser. It looks like it's in the works. It looks like it's happening.
That's interesting.
Very excited about that. Maybe it's stuff I shouldn't be leaking, but...
But then again, it's whatever. A podcast. What is going to happen?
Whatever.
You should have just told me. I would have leaked it. Nobody
case,
could...
Worst case, but it doesn't matter. I don't care. The song's over? Play it again.
I was about to, actually.
I can't do my going for one.
The longest final thoughts.
I don't think it's ever happened.
Yeah, no, it's the first time. Listen, sometimes you just got to keep it going, man. You don't want just 90 seconds of heat. My going for one, going for two. I think cereal's stupid. I'm just going to go for one this
Why?
Way. Because, like, okay, I think it's delicious. Yes. But so let me pitch it to you this way.
Okay.
It is a milk and bread-based gazpacho.
Yes.
Will you order that? Sorry, a sweet milk and bread based gazpacho.
It's funny because I can totally see it described as that at a fine dining place. Like, you ever see things like, oh, a deconstructed whatever? I'm like, it's a fucking sandwich.
Put your guys together. Don't be lazy.
Think about it. Would you order a sweet milk and bread gazpacho? You're just imagining, like, sourdough floating on top of milk.
That's disgusting. That's it for this week, guys. Thank you, Simo, for joining us. Thank you, Eagle, for the production. Next time, please do some prep work for your stupid
segment.
I mean,
next time is going to be in a long time, so, you know.
It's true. No Simo next week. We're going to be bringing in some other talent, some more talent than Simo, of course. So thank you, guys, for this week, and thank you, thanks everyone for watching. But most of all, thank you all for letting me be myself. I actually timed it well this time, this song.
So, if we have a gazpacho for cereal, what would you describe as like Eggos or like waffles?
Eggos is cardboard you put in a toaster.
Cardboard? Eggos is amazing.
Eggos are not amazing.
I love it.
Trash.
That's great.
Okay, so first thing to do is go to the doctor and have him remove all of your taste buds.
If you smoke a joint and then put 2 Eggos in a toaster, it's going to change your world.
After you smoke a joint, most people change their
world. Hey.